welcome to another great episode of Stick Like Glue Radio. I am your host, Jim Palmer. I'm known as the Dream Business Coach, and this is the podcast to learn how you too can create your dream business so you can live your dream lifestyle. I'm the founder and creator of the Dream Business Academy and the Dream Business Coaching and Mastermind Program. I coach entrepreneurs and small business owners at all levels how to build a business of their dreams, again, so they can live their dream lifestyle with both financial and time freedom. Today's episode is brought to you by Dream Business Academy. That is a three-day live event. Our next one, which is our seventh, is taking place this September in Providence, Rhode Island, September 27th, 28th, and 29th. This is a marketing and business building event unlike anything you've been to. I completely pitch-free zone, teaching my million-dollar platform, how I built my dream business. Learn more at dreambusinessacademy.com. By the way, we have early registration discounts, and if you register and use the coupon code podcast, you can get $100 off the early registration price. Again, that's dreambusinessacademy.com. Use the coupon code podcast, and let's get right into today's show. I'm really excited. My guest is not your typical entrepreneur, I would say, or at least didn't start out that way. My guest is Kevin Van Eekeren. I certainly hope I pronounced your last name right, Kevin. I forgot to ask you that, but hopefully that's
Van
close
Eekeren,
enough.
Van Eekeren.
Van Eekeren, thank you. So Kevin started his career as a logistic SWAT officer for a SWAT team, and that gave him insight into the criminal justice world, and he soon found that training SWAT teams was the best way to reduce the use of force while ensuring the national security of our country. Fulcrum Tactical was born out of that idea, and within 18 months, he took it from a charity to an actual for-profit company. Kevin started investing in startups on the side, but focused on Fulcrum Tactical and his new venture, Fulcrum Farms, which is a sustainable farm producing high-quality meats and eggs for families and restaurants in the Chicagoland area. After 6 years, Kevin sold Fulcrum Tactical and moved on to investing in other startups full-time by starting the company Fulcrum Investing. I think you're seeing a theme there with the Fulcrum part. He also spends his free time co-hosting a podcast called The State of Logic. Kevin, how are you doing today?
I am fantastic. How are you, Jim?
Pretty good. I appreciate your coming on. So you've had quite a varied – when I think of, working with police officers and, SWAT teams and then raising, pigs and chickens and then going out and investing in businesses, I mean, I'm trying to think, where's the middle ground here? How did all that come about?
Well, it started off with my interest in college in trying to study psychology, business, criminal justice, and a few other things as well. And it just didn't make sense that I had to get a degree in everything. I just wanted to learn as much as I could. And I quickly learned from my experience as a criminal justice student that I learned far more from doing ride-alongs with the police than I did in class. And so I kind of made it my mission to go into as many careers as possible because I learned best from experience.
Very cool. Now, did you have any parents or other relatives with entrepreneurial genes, so to speak, or when you decided to become an entrepreneur, was this forging new ground in your family?
No, it's not forging new ground. Both my grandfather and father were entrepreneurs as well. But I think it's more so I took a different turn with the wide variety of things I got into. They tended to be the same thing over and over again until they found success, and I wanted to switch that up a little.
Okay. So, it's interesting what you said about you wanted to go on ride-alongs, you just wanted to do it, you learn more by doing that, I'm actually, as you and I are talking, I'm writing my seventh book, and it's called Just Say Yes. And I was reviewing just a couple days ago how many times I've said yes without knowing what I was doing, but I went and learned, a certain skill. Or, I used to work for this company. When they decided to franchise it, the owner of the business says, hey, we need a two-week training program. We need manuals and everything. I said, I'll do it. I know I could have never done that before, but I figured it out. So it sounds like you have a similar mindset that way.
Absolutely. I feel like the 10,000 plus hours I've spent with the police working the streets as a ride along have given me the experience I needed to then start Fulcrum Invest, Fulcrum Tactical, and be successful. So I completely agree that that is the best way to learn.
So just out of curiosity, obviously Fulcrum Tactical, Fulcrum Farms, Fulcrum Investing, the word fulcrum, does that have special meaning to you, or is that kind of the leverage piece, or what's the meaning behind that?
Yeah, so my dad was an industrial engineer, and
okay.
he always taught me that whether you know the fulcrum, when you know the fulcrum, which is the power point of a lever, you can move anything. And that works just as well in physics as it does in negotiation, as it does in any other business setting. And that all made sense to me. So as kind of a tribute to him, I try and name as many things as I can fulcrum.
Wow. Well, first of all, I like the analogy, but it's also good branding. You know, my first business is online. It was No Hassle Newsletters, No Hassle Social Media, No Hassle Custom Articles. Everything was
sure.
No Hassle. Today, my brand is Dream Business This, Dream Business That. So there's no sense coming up with brands or new themes and things like that. So that's pretty smart from a marketing perspective. So when you were working with police officers, what got you interested in, you know, the concept of reducing force? Did you see a lot of that from the ride-alongs? Like, man, I got to figure out a way to defuse certain situations, or what got you into that?
It actually came out of so I started out as a logistics officer on a SWAT team, which is a civilian position. And
okay.
My job was to professionalize a SWAT team, which, let me tell you, is like herding cats.
Right.
And so as I was doing that, I started thinking about how can I help these guys? And they kept saying how they needed better equipment. So I wrote grants and I collected money and I got them the equipment that they needed. And then I still saw them doing stupid things. And it's not because they're stupid at all. It's just that they didn't have the training necessary to implement those new tools, those new pieces of equipment effectively. So then I got I pulled a trainer in. His name's Steve Claggett. He's a genius. And he came in for a week and taught us how to use these new tools and kind of taught us how to think critically about problem solving in a very quick way. And thanks to his amazing instruction, we were in a use of deadly force situation just a few weeks later. And thankfully, the only person that was hurt was the suspect who was shooting at the police. But because of the tactics the police used, the police were okay.
Wow. Wow. Talk about, I can't imagine what it's like being in that situation. But when you think about the outcome and everything based on the training, that must have made you feel pretty good.
It was great. It was absolutely great. And I also saw that by his form of training, they continued to iterate on what he was doing to suit their own needs. He wasn't just giving them, here's the 10 things. He was more teaching them, I guess the better analogy is, he wasn't giving them the fish, he was teaching them how to fish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we saw significant progress over the next year.
So just a quick question. It's almost an aside, and I don't want to get into politics and things like that, but you always hear about lack of training in the police departments. Part of me says that's just crap that you hear, but is there a lack of training when it comes to the kind of the SWAT teams and you know, when people go out there to handle these deadly situations? Did you see a need for that?
Absolutely. Now, I don't want to tell you that every SWAT team is undertrained, because that is not true at all. But
okay.
There are, I would say the majority of them cannot afford the equipment and training necessary to do their job at the highest level.
Mm.
And that is really scary for us as civilians, because if we're ever in a really bad scenario, a hostage situation is the scariest, and they weren't trained to handle that in the proper way, more than likely it's civilians who are going to get hurt.
Wow. So, you know, I applaud your efforts to go that way, and I imagine funding with anything that's, you know, governmental, that must have been hard. And you did that for, I guess you said, 6 years, and then you sold that. Is that company still going? Did you sell that to a larger company? Or
I actually sold it to my head trainer, Steve Claggett, and he is still running it successfully. and training SWAT teams all over the nation.
How cool is that? So after you sold that, Kevin, then or was the farming thing, is that kind of something you do with the family, or how did you get into that?
No, you know, I wanted to find a way, because while I was doing that, I had another startup, and I've always been interested in investing, so I've done that on the side. So I was working 100-plus hours a week, and I needed to find a way to do a job that was just fun. It's not about making money. It's just enjoying what I like or enjoying something that would relax me. And so I started a farm with 28 chickens, and now we have thousands of chickens and ducks and pigs and quail and goats and all sorts of other stuff.
And, of course, fitting your examples previous, you probably had no farming experience to speak of. you just went
none.
Along and did it.
Absolutely none.
Oh, typical entrepreneur. How awesome is that?
Exactly.
So you're into fulcrum investing now, and so you invest in other entrepreneurial startups. How do you find those? Do you look for startups within certain niches, or are you just trying to help other people kind of scratch their entrepreneurial itch?
Sure. So we are completely agnostic as to what areas of industry we invest in. The only thing that we ask is that they are somewhat small, so we invest in seed and Series A stages, and that they have to be within the United States.
Okay.
Beyond that, we use a lot of psychological profiling bias elimination methods to ensure that we're making a logical and rational investment.
Do you offer coaching or consulting, or I think of Shark Tank, where a lot of people, they don't just need money, they need the mentoring and things like that. How involved is Fulcrum Investing when you're looking to work with entrepreneurs?
Sure. So we have a team of 8 total, including myself, one of which is a Harvard grad who is our in-house consultant. So he goes into every business after we've invested, and he gives them kind of a tune-up as to how to get the most out of their employees, how to better utilize their marketing dollars, all those other things. And he pulls in people from the diligence team who have expertises in different areas of business to say, this is what we need to change. What are your recommendations? And we all kind of come together, write a report, and provide that for the startup. We also provide hiring services through different psychological tests that we use to ensure that they're hiring the right people, because that is the lifeblood of any company.
Right. Investing obviously is a risky business, and you work with startups. Now, I help a lot of entrepreneurs get into business. When you say startups, that sometimes means different things. Are you talking about like brand new entrepreneurial companies or startups that have some initial funding? Or I know you're agnostic, but what's like a great customer for you?
Yeah, typically we're looking for companies that have between 10 and $100,000 a month in revenue.
Okay.
Sometimes we'll look at pre-revenue companies, but that has to be a part of their larger play. You know, if we waited for revenue, if we were investing in Twitter, we would have never gotten in.
Right.
So we have to kind of be conscious of that. And then the other thing we always look at is the ones that have usually less than 10 employees and are doing something that we believe in morally.
Gotcha. What kind of mistake you must see? I'm curious if do you know how many people either apply or that you connect with some way, and then you don't invest in them? I imagine that's probably a fairly high percentage.
It is. So we have a 3-stage diligence process. The first stage is just to hear about the idea and all that, and that's where most of the people get weeded out.
Okay.
So if we look at, let's just say, 50 startups in a month, we will whittle it down to about 6 that take our psychological profiling tests, and then from that we whittle it down to 3, and we do diligence, hardcore deep diligence for the next 30 days on those 3, and we all vote as to which ones we should or should not invest in. No matter what, once we've made that decision, we come back to them and give them a very in-depth reason as to why we're not investing. Because as a community, we need to be part of the bigger picture to help these companies succeed, whether we invest or not.
Right. So it occurs to me, I might ask you a question you don't want to answer, and feel free not to ask it. I like diving into this for my own knowledge, but if I ask something that's inappropriate,
sure.
Just do what a politician does and tell me what you had for dinner instead of the question. When you're looking at these companies, the time it takes you to do a lot of due diligence and do all this, I mean, that costs money in and of itself. Is there an application? Do you have people apply, or you just do you hope that if you weed out of 50 a month and you score, you know, two or three deals and they go really well, that does that cover all the upfront, you know, expenses that you have?
Well, it's very interesting that you bring that up, because we only look at investments that are recommended to us by other investors who are very interested in investing in the same round. So before we did that, when I was just getting started, I was getting sometimes 200 or 300 people emailing me in a given week suggesting that I invest, and I just couldn't sort through it all. And
right.
So, and I was alone at that time. I wasn't working with anyone. And so finally we figured out the best process was to go through someone else first. If they vet it and they like it, then we can continue. And then after that, we really work hard to make sure that everyone is on the same page as us. And so we give them those criteria, which don't sound that specific, but they really are. And a lot of people are coming in completely pre-revenue. They've never built or sold or provided any service to anyone. And they just have an idea and want some money, and that's not going to happen, because we care about execution, not ideas. On the flip
right.
side, if you have a $300 million company, we're not going to be investing either.
Yeah. It's always interesting, you know, if you have a $300 million company, are you still looking for investors? And I guess if you're trying to 10X your business, you're always looking for investor, because cash flow alone, I guess, won't do it. How many different niches do you work in? Are you mostly dominated by the tech space, or are service-based companies still doing well?
Yeah, you know, service-based companies, especially business services, are killing it. Especially when you talk about the tech-enabled services. Now, I have to say that I am not an overly technical savvy person, so thank God I have people like Joe Nitti on my team to guide me through those things. But the vast majority of our investments are at least tech-enabled. A select few are high-tech, kind of high-frequency trading type of. It's just pure, amazing technology that's driving profit. But moreover, we also, you know, we're invested in a chain of restaurants in Chicago. We're invested in a lot of SaaS businesses, and even some product companies have been some of our biggest hits. So we invest in truly everything.
What has worked for you the most? Do you think it's obtaining an equity position, or is it just, you know, getting a return on your capital for a period of time, or are they all equity? Is that the only type of thing you'll invest in when you get an equity share?
Yeah, so the vast majority of startup capital out there is out for equity. So everyone hears about a convertible note, and basically that is a proposition for someone to lend you money, and you can pay them 8% or whatever in 18 months to get that back. And if the investor really needed that capital, it gives them that option. But 95% of investors are out there not to make 8% in 18 months. They're out to make 10, 20, 30, 40X. And so you have to convert that convertible note into equity, which most investors do, and, you know, continue on your way, hoping and praying that one out of 10 actually makes it to exit in the next 7 years. It's a pretty risky business.
What's the one mistake you see most often when interviewing and kind of doing your due diligence on these startups?
It's what I call the ugly baby syndrome. So we've all had this happen where one of our friends posts a picture of their brand new newborn baby on Facebook, and you look at it and you're not sure whether you're looking at a child or an alien, right? But no one's going to tell them that because it's their kid, and I'm sure they're going to turn out to be a great adult, but right now they just don't look okay. Similarly, when people start businesses, this tends to they are so biased by their own input, by their own drive to make this work, that they often don't understand how bad their idea is. And so even though their family's supporting them and maybe even giving them a little bit of money, they're just writing it off as, I don't want to fight with my child. I don't want to fight with my friend. So I'm just going to support them in a small way. When really the best thing they could do is walk them through that business plan and say, I don't understand how this is going to help people. I could be wrong. Maybe you should go to someone that you're not a friend with, that you're not related to, and get their professional opinion on this just to make sure it's worth your time and your money.
Right. Man, people do get emotionally attached to their baby. I'm sure you remember that Seinfeld episode. I kept thinking of that where Kramer looks in on the baby in the crib, who you never actually see. He goes, blah, he falls down. But, you know, people get so emotionally attached to their ideas. And you know, it's true. I tell people, I've been doing weekly videos like 6 years. One of the things I say is you have to ask the right people. If you ask a family member or a friend who knows you for who you are, not who you're working and striving to be, it's hard for them to see what you're trying to do because they only know you, you know, as that person, for one thing. The other thing is, if they're, for example, if you're going to ask them a marketing-based question and they have, you know, they have no experience in marketing, why would you ask them just because they're a family member? You know, they could say that's hideous, and it could actually be very effective. You know what I mean? So it really does pay you. You know, you got to get the advice. You know, I like watching Shark Tank, and you know, Mr. Wonderful is like, take that out behind the barn and shoot it. This idea will never go anywhere. And you
sure.
know, here's a guy who created a $1 billion business, and the people that walk out of there go, I'm going to prove them wrong. I'm going to prove those 6 millionaires and billionaires wrong, damn it. It's like, okay.
Oh, my goodness. It is certainly one of those things where, and I also think it's important to remember that there's a big difference between a company that can support a family in a very awesome way. You know, a single restaurant is a great example, or a single hardware store. That could easily support a family, and I strongly encourage people to open those businesses. That's what drives our economy. But it's not right for an investor because 9 out of 10 startups don't make it. And so if we lose 9 out of 10 investments, that means we have to make at least 10x. on the investments that do make it. And a hardware store or a single restaurant is never going to produce that for all of its investors. So I think
right.
That's also the important part here.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, this has been fascinating. One last question for you. I know, you know, as you and I are doing this interview, you're getting ready to launch a new podcast. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was on the SWAT team, I was just 26 years old when I started. And one of the first call-outs we got, I happened to have my dog with me, an all-black German Shepherd. So when I took her out of the car after about an hour and I had left the car on for the AC and all that, I let her out to go to the bathroom, put her back in. That night I went home, turned on the TV, and the news had reported that the barricaded gunman call that we had been at, which it turned out no one was in the house, he must have run out the back before we got there. They said that there's a hostage situation and there's explosives involved, and that's why we brought out the bomb dog. And they're showing a picture of me taking my dog out of the car. And so I remember thinking, this isn't okay. Like, I need to call them. So I called the news station, talked to a producer, and told him this. And he literally laughed in my face and hung up. And I thought to myself, what is going on? And so ever since, I've been very skeptical of the major media sources, and as I've been more skeptical, I've done my research and found that they have an unimaginable bias toward one thing or another, that kind of skews people's beliefs on things. So The State of Logic, my podcast, strives to have informative conversations, much like you and I have had, but on a vast array of topics. And the hope is that we provide them with enough unique information that listeners will then go out and Google it and do some research and then come to their own informed opinion.
Yeah. Well, good for you. I mean, we need, and actually that's kind of the state of, I think, where we are today. There's so many sources where people can get news that, you know, the mainstream media is really feeling, you know, a little out of sorts, like they don't control stuff anymore. And
right.
So anyway, not to go down that road at this last minute, because that'll take up another hour. But I have no fear that you and I would come out at similar understandings of that area.
I am sure anyway, you're right.
Yeah, Kevin, I've really enjoyed speaking with you. It sounds like you've had an unbelievable career so far, but it also strikes me as you're just getting started. I have no idea, going from SWAT teams to chickens to investing, I have no idea what your next step is, but I bet there's six more things going to fill your resume before you get on your hammock or your boat or wherever you're going to go.
Well, one can only hope. Jim, it has been great talking to you. I've really enjoyed listening to your former podcast, and I'm so grateful to be able to be a guest on one now.
Well, thanks. What's a website, by the way? I almost let you go with being remiss in my duties. What's a website where people can connect with you and learn more about you, and maybe there's somebody out there that wants to talk with you about investing?
Sure. Fulcruminvesting.com, or you can email us at info@fulcruminvesting.com, and the entire team will get the email. We'll respond within 24 hours. And we look forward to hearing from everyone.
Perfect. Well, I got a lot of listeners. You may regret giving out that email, but I guess that's what you do.
You'll certainly do not. No. I'm always okay. About hearing more from more people.
All right. Kevin, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Hey, folks, that wraps up this very special episode of Stick Like Glue Radio. Remember, Dream Business Academy is our sponsor for this show, and you can get $100 off your early registration discount by using the coupon code PODCAST at checkout. That is at dreambusinessacademy.com, dreambusinessacademy.com. Tongue-tied here. Thanks to my editors, my assistants, all of my dream team members who make this so doggone easy for me to do. I enjoy this immensely. I'm your host, Jim Palmer, the Dream Business Coach. I'm committed to helping you build a more profitable business faster. Thanks, you all, for listening, and we'll get you next week. Take care.